The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Welcome, everyone. We're going to listen to county road funding issues this afternoon, and we have some folks on the phone with us that we'll call upon in due course. But we're going to begin with John Oshel.
That's one of many acceptors.
It is, John. Thank you.
I have the same problem.
You're the road manager for the Association of Oregon Counties.
Yes.
You could state your name for the record. We'll get going.
This is John Oshel. I'm the County Road Program Manager with the Association of Oregon Counties. Give me a second to get this thing clicked, and we'll get underway. My job basically involves working with the county road officials all over the state. Worked with them for years. Basically have a third of a century in county roads. Last 10 of, about 12 of which been working for the Association of Oregon Counties. Before that, about 20 years with Tillamook County as the Public Works Director.
And John, can I have you move that microphone just a little closer?
I can do that.
Good.
I'm in the process of trying to figure out how to work left-handed here, but I'm sure we'll make this work. Start off with just sort of where the counties sit within the system of roads within Oregon. As we all know, we have a number of jurisdictions, but we all operate one system to try and get the resources of the state, the urban areas, get all the people and product and everywhere we need to go. You see, the counties have the largest portion of the system. ODOT, you know, smaller portion in miles, certainly in magnitude of their system and traffic and volume of freight, much bigger than us. We spend a lot more money on them than us. Highly appropriate. We're not here to tell you any different. Important to understanding the county road system is to look at the amount of miles of BLM miles and U.S. Forest Service miles out there. By and large, the access from the state highway system to those lands is on county roads. So to get those resources out, critical that we take care of that system. Our system, about 27,000 miles. Note that statistic of paved versus unpaved, and notice how basically Western Oregon is mostly paved, Eastern Oregon, not so much. Once again, Western Oregon, that's where the people are. That's where you have a lot of agricultural product that needs a pretty good road to bring it to market without damaging the product. Eastern, you've got a lot of rangeland, a lot of timberland. It can come out on those gravel roads. They don't take as much money to maintain, but it's absolutely critical that we keep that system open. Bridges, if you notice a little footnote, half the bridges are on the county system. Now, not in size of bridges, because certainly ODOT has a lot bigger bridges, but if you think about trying to bring that resource in from market, half the places where you can have a road closed that will stop that from bringing it in market, half of those are on county roads.
Yes.
You want us to wait until the end, because there's a question on the last slide.
You have a question?
Yeah, so,
John.
So the last slide you showed the county roads, paved and unpaved, but there's still 10,000 more miles of roads. So are they something besides paved and unpaved?
There's roads that are actually two-lane roads. That is, when you get out in the real rural area, you have quite a few roads, particularly in eastern Oregon, where you just have two ruts. It's used, it's public, but we're not spending a lot of money maintaining it. So,
but it's still a county designated.
It's county designated. If there's a problem, we need to go fix it, reopen it, whatever. But the reality is, we don't drop a lot of money on it, so I didn't try and claim it.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We just recently gathered up the data. It took a long time for ODOT to figure out how to do this. It was an extremely difficult process, because the reporting is difficult for reasons I won't get into. But we basically recently discovered about a fourth of the fatal and serious accidents are happening out on the county road system. Now, things are in place underway now where we are shifting funding that's coming from FHWA to get more of it coming to the counties, to the cities. There's processes in place. Won't really go into that now, but we're reacting as we think of the system of county roads, state highways, and city streets to try and work on getting more funding towards solving those accidents out on the local road system. Existing county road revenues. This is 2012. It will change radically in a year if we don't get a reauthorization of secure rural schools. And if you excuse me a second, I'm going to chase ahead to some of my notes. Not included in this thing, this is the revenues that flow through our county budgets. There is a lot of Federal Highway Administration dollars which go out on the county system. ODOT shares them with us based on need and so forth. They manage those things. They actually manage those projects so they don't go through our budgets. Paul Mather will be up later, and he'll talk about some of that stuff we do there. Once again, this is our thinking of the system. The state highway fund is shared. The formula changes from year to year is what's allocated. Currently, counties are getting about 27% of it. You'll see that's a major portion of our budget. That U.S. Forest Service, federal timber receipts, in 2008, that was about $100 million. It's currently that $46 million you're looking at. If we don't get reauthorization next year, the check will be $4 million. So we are looking at a major change in that revenue. When you look at the other state revenues, a big chunk of that, frankly, was a Job for Transportation Act that provided some funding for projects in Region 5. And a lot of that shows up there. That, of course, is going to be fading down as those projects go. Some of that is OTIA projects that are still being completed. Some of it is some traffic safety grants that are out there. The other federal, we do receive some money from BLM. A lot of this, frankly, is around disaster relief situations where we get funding from FEMA, and sometimes the funding from FHWA flows directly to us. So that's the primary funding sources. We're now going to take a look at the other local revenues. Sorry. I knew I wanted this on my right side. The pie chart there are, once again, the total county road revenue is $452 million. The local portion of it is about $130 million. So you're looking about a third of it. This is the revenues that come from local sources. Once again, there's the famous statement around counties. Once you understand how one county works, you understand how one county works. So many of these things are revenues that look like a lot of money, but they're just collected from a few counties. Property taxes is almost all from six counties that are counties that never had U.S. Forest Service revenue. Mm-hmm. If you look at the counties that never had U.S. Forest Service revenue, they almost all have had property taxes for a long time. Exceptions, but that's a good generality. When you look at the county general fund, 36 of that $39 million is in Washington County. When you look at the local vehicle registration and gasoline, only Multnomah and Washington counties have that. When you look at the development fees, that primarily is in the high-growth counties because that's the places where you can collect those type of revenues. That's your local improvement districts, your system development charges, traffic impact fees. Those work in growing urban areas, don't really work as any source of serious revenue in a rural area. When you look at the bonds, $15 million of that is Multnomah County for the Selwood Bridge. So when you look at everything else, it really is everything else. When you look at revenues, that's aggregate fees in Columbia County, that's permit fees for trucks, that's toll fees for the ferries in Marion and Clackamas counties. None of these fees are very big for any county, but there's a lot of them out there, a lot of people hustling, trying to figure out how to do things.
John, let's go back to the previous slide. The local vehicle registration gasoline taxes, there was a preemption, if I recall correctly, in the JTA for five years.
Correct. And that basically expires July of next year.
July of 14.
Correct.
Right. Okay. And so other counties that wanted to do so could, if nothing else changes.
They could. It frankly, when you have to get a vote of the people to get a gasoline tax, I'm not aware of any place where anywhere in Oregon people have voted for a gasoline tax. Basically, the taxes out there have either been the state that has done it and managed to do it without getting referred. I understand that is tricky, folks. You know what to. Or there have been in counties that were home rule where they had the ability to do it without voting the people. So far, the people, as much as they want the services, we haven't got them there yet. I suspect we'll get better at it.
Or the roads may force it. Who knows?
Yes.
So go ahead, please. Thank you.
I'm going to show you a pie chart of this, but I just thought you might be interested. I didn't know if you knew that you have a state law that requires us to turn this into the legislature every year. ORS 366.7442 says anyone receiving state highway fund money has to turn in and say how much we spend on each of these categories, list them by name. There you go. There's a picture of it. Shows it a little better. You're seeing operation and maintenance. That's our biggest thing. repair and preservation. That's where we need to drop our money, especially as money is drying up, and you're going to see more and more focus on that rather than construction and expansion.
Co-chair Benz, thank you. Could you define for me the difference between repair and preservation and operations and maintenance?
My question, thank you.
Repair and preservation tends to be the fixing the chuck hole. When you think in terms of paving, that is putting a thin overlay on it as opposed to a thick one that will actually handle more trucks and so forth. It might be a chip seal where you're just shooting oil and a little rock on it. There's maintenance of other things like that. Your operations and maintenance, when you get into maintenance, this is the mowing, this is the digging the ditches, you know, keep them clean.
Clearing the culverts.
Cleaning the culverts, okay. That nature of stuff. There's a very fuzzy line between the two.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's helpful.
Representative Davis, did you have a question?
That was my question.
That was your question. Thank you.
We talked earlier about the timber receipts going away. A little bit of history so you understand what the history of that is, where we are. Historically, for over 100 years, U.S. Forest Service land, federal law says 25% of all the timber receipts go to roads and schools. Oregon state law has designated that goes 75% to the county school funds, 25% to the county, said it backwards, 25% to the county schools, 75% to the county roads. It's good revenue for a lot of years. When the timber harvest stopped due to the environmental concerns, so did that revenue. So over the last 10, 12 years, we've had a number of different types of what have been called transition, but basically the idea was transitioning until the harvest started again, and the harvest hasn't started again. The most recent, of course, is secure rural schools. If you look at the little orange red at the bottom, that's what our revenue would have been over the last few years had we not had this additional guarantee money. The blue lines is what we got through the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act. The last blue one there is the money we got last January. If we don't get a reauthorization, that one in 13, that is what we get next January. Big hit.
So, John, if we go back to your first year, which looks like 01.
Yes.
If we were to go when we were getting 25% of the timber receipts, how did that match up with what we see in 01?
Can't really point that little orange thing right at the bottom. That's what we would have been receiving without the guarantee.
Correct, but I really want to go back to the time when we were still in the forest and compare what we were receiving when we were in the forest. And then when we came out of the forest, we shifted over to what we see on your chart. So my question is, were we making more as a state under these payments in lieu or less than when we were actually logging?
Chair Benz, yes. At the beginning of the initial year, if my memory is right, they started paying us right around, actually slightly less than what we were making off the timber. It was a three-year average of just before that time. Actually, the three-year average was around the 1990s. That we were right about the level you see what the blue is there. I ran around in circles. Would you like me to try that a little slower?
No, that's fine. Was there a space between leaving the woods and these payments starting, or did they start immediately as we left the woods?
Chair Ben, somewhat complicated answer, but let me give you a short one. It tapered off rather fast after 1990. On the west side counties, there was a spotted owl guarantee that gave those a revenue that started at 85% of that maximum revenue and was ratcheting down to 3%. During that same time, Eastern Oregon did not have a guarantee at all, so they actually did drop down to that level for a few years.
Thank you.
Congressional delegation has been working hard on revenue for the counties, both roads and schools. The last reauthorization was actually tied to the ARRA. I mean, the history of this is we tie it as a tag on to some other big bill that's going through Congress because as a standalone, the rest of the nation doesn't seem to be too concerned about the Northwest timber issue. Our next likely thing to try and get something on is when we do that healthy forest legislation that, frankly, we're most of us more interested in the healthy forest legislation than we are on the guarantee. for something happening between now and our payment next January, we're not real optimistic. We certainly would like to be optimistic, but it's not looking real good. Impact of losing the timber revenues, and of course, in the same time, the legislature passed the Jobs for Transportation Act. That a, you know, 30% of that came to the counties. That is turning into about $73 million a year. That's what we got last year. That's good news, $73 million more money. The bad news is, remember, in that time frame, we're losing about $100 million in U.S. forest revenues. It's an overall loss of $27 million a year, even though the legislature did wonderful things for us with the Jobs for Transportation Act. The change isn't uniform across the state for counties, and that's an extremely important message. You need to remember the state highway fund that is increasing is distributed by counties based on the vehicle registrations in each county. If you've got a big population, you get a big increase. If you've got a small population, you don't get much. The U.S. forest revenue is distributed based on the historic timber cut in each county. If you've got big timber, you're seeing a big, huge drop. If you didn't have any timber at all, you don't see much. So there's winners and losers. This shows you, and this is a percentage of the those two funds, who's up and who's down. And what I will tell you is, in a short summary, if you're in an urban area that doesn't have much forest, you got some real substantial, almost a 40% increase in your state highway fund and no loss in timber revenues. If you're a big forest county with not much population, you took a comparable cut. And so it really does vary as you go from county to county around the state.
So you've netted that out? That graph nets out the two? Is that what is happening?
Yeah. In other words, if you look at how much they went up and down percentage of the total of the two, that's what it is.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
And so you've got like Gilliam and Sherman County that are way up?
Yes. Gilliam and Sherman County never had any forest revenue.
Oh, okay.
Total dollar amount, it isn't much. But the percentage of those two funds, yeah, it's substantial.
Thank you.
Once again, no forest revenue to start with. They're sort of the anomaly, where they're not the real big loser, the real big gainer. Because, yeah, it looks percentage-wise, it's a lot, but in dollar, it's not much. In the midst of all this, inflation is hitting us. Our prime product, I'm almost there. Okay. Our prime product is asphalt. The best way to see that price is asphalt sealing oil. This is when we're actually just trying to put a nice top on our pavement to preserve it. And we're out there spreading with a distributor, and we're paying for a ton of oil. As you can see, 10 years ago, it was $182 a ton. It's $624 now, depending on which vendor, but it's up in that range. So as your price of gasoline shoots the roof, so does our prime product for maintenance.
Mm.
We're reducing crew sizes. You see this from 1980, and then it started ratcheting down faster. This last time I did the analysis was 2010. We've had some serious drops in a few more counties. Lane County in particular has taken some pretty substantial drops in the last 2 years. We just have less people to get the job done.
And that's a fairly deceptive slide, because you have the, you know, it's a statewide slide as opposed to a timber county slide.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
In 2006, we did a county road need study. This is just before we started losing the timber guarantee rapidly. What you see here, the situation is obviously getting worse as the revenue goes down. What you will notice is that as revenue goes down proportionally, we're putting more of our money into maintenance, operations, repairs. That's what it takes to keep the road open and safe. That's where we preserve our investment. The capital improvement as a ratio, you'll see that dropping. We have most of our counties right now, if it's a capital improvement project, it's probably a federal aid project. What does that mean with the crew sizes and the less money? And I will talk generally and talk real fast, because frankly we have some counties coming up that are going to give you specific examples. I have met with the road officials and talking about what are they doing with the reduced crew sizes. And the answer is, you know, we're getting it done. It just takes longer. I have to hit you with an anecdotal story. As I mentioned, I had been Tillamook County Public Works Director for years, looking online last winter, and I see this big picture in the paper that says, here's a slide out on Bay Ocean Road, and the road department will have it open by this afternoon. And my first thought is, that's a little slide. We would have had it open before the buses got there.
Mm-hmm.
Then you say, yeah, but I had 33 people in the road department Leanne Welch has 19. That's the difference. We'll get it open. It's just going to take longer. Mm-hmm. Preservation and repair, we've alluded to. If you don't fix it now, it's not just, it delays it. It gets much, much, much more expensive. That deterioration of the system is not going to fall off the table next year or the year after, but it's just going to slowly keep deteriorating and getting much, much more expensive to repair. And in the midst of all that, we lose our safety. That's the end of my comments. Any questions?
Questions for this panelist?
Thank you.
None. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next presenter will be Paul Mather. Paul?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Mather, Highway Division of Interstate Road. I'd ask John just to stay up here as I'm going to cover our relationship that ODOT has with the counties, and likely many of the questions you ask me. John may be more informed to answer the question than myself. So I'm just going to talk briefly about a couple things. One is how we share or distribute state highway dollars that come in from the state gas tax, and then the federal dollars that come through ODOT from the Federal Highway Administration, that federal Highway Administration asks us to manage on their behalf. So starting with the state funds, as John talked about, those funds are shared between state, county, and city. Currently that's a 50-30-20 split between of the funds. Now to go, you actually have to go back further in the history of the gas tax and how funds were distributed between those three jurisdictions. In fact, I was looking back, you go back far enough, it actually started out something like about 68% for state highways, 20 for county, and 12 to city. And so we've migrated towards this 50-30-20, but we've been at the 50-30-20 for some time. I'd say on the order of 20 or 25 years, that as we designed the OTA 1, 2, 3, JTA, all those were designed under the 50-30-20 split. In that realm, the counties receive about $240 million annually through the State Highway Fund for state gas tax, which hopefully jives with the numbers that John had on his pie chart up there earlier. Cities receive about $160 million annually from that. The other pieces in the State Highway Fund that I would comment on is the state highway funds that we use in ODOT are used to operate the agency. So there are maintenance funds, there are DMV funds. We're not allowed to use federal highway funds for the operation and maintenance of the system. Their intent is for capital projects. And so at a local level, a lot of our district managers work hand in hand with counties and cities. I have a document here, it's about 40 pages long, of all the intergovernmental agreements and all the opportunities that we have working with local government cities and counties. And as we each become more conscious of our operations, the cost of our operations, how we spend our money, how can we be more efficient with money, is drawing us closer and closer together to share equipment, share material, share personnel. Road maintenance is a fairly unique piece of work, as we've talked about in some of the other legislation this session. Having our counterparts in the county have the same type of equipment, same type of skill sets, has offered many opportunities for efficiencies in our operations. So I just wanted to highlight that. So moving on to the federal funds. As I said, the federal funds that pass to the cities and counties are required to go through ODOT. We're required to apply all the federal standards and requirements as we administer those funds on behalf of the Federal Highway Administration. There's about $125 million annually that comes through ODOT in federal funds that go to cities and counties in various ways through MPOs directly to cities and counties. We have STP funds, local bridge, safety, air quality funds, a variety of different things come through ODOT to local jurisdictions. As John was highlighting in his presentation, the recent MAP 21 actually pointed more money towards safety, and as part of that requirement actually asked us to look at a jurisdictionally blind process to address fatal and serious accidents. And again, dovetailing on John's presentation, we're looking at a new process that's a jurisdictionally blind process that really looks at the entire system and how do we make the entire system safer, targeted towards those more serious accidents. And so we're in active conversations in designing that new process. But we anticipate, based on, as you saw, the numbers that John presented, anticipate that one of the results of that will be is more of those safety funds will end up on city and county roads from those additional funds in the MAP 21. Also, I want to talk a little about the selection process. As you saw in our agency overview clear back in February, we talked about our capital construction program and how we're changing some of our selection processes and developing our STIP, which is our capital construction program. Traditionally, we had about 38 different categories or colors of money that came to us. Most of those are federal types of funding that came to our Transportation Commission. As we developed our STIP, every 2 years we'd go to the Commission and each of those categories make a recommendation as to how much to spend. We'd have a conversation and they would go back and land on a final number. We'd usually have a selection process different for the different types of funding. Some went to Area Commission of Transportation. Some had a statewide advisory committee that went to. Some was staff, went through a selection process. But what we wanted to do was really look at changing that process to get out of those funding silos and really point money at a local level that improved transportation. Again, from this jurisdictionally blind process, what are the most urgent needs in a community from a transportation standpoint that was jurisdictionally blind, and the extent we can with the funds, modally blind, and really trying to look at the biggest needs in those communities. And so we designed a different process where we took those different colors of money and put those into one of two categories, either what we called fix it, which was maintaining what we had, or enhancing the system that's out there. We also changed our selection processes and focused that selection process on those area commissions of transportation that we have around the state and asked them to be more than just highway focused in their selection, but also look at transit, bikeway, and other transportation projects and really focus on those needs in those modes that they have and look beyond just the state highway system where they traditionally have been and look at the needs in their community. We're about halfway through that process. They reported back to the commission their 150% list, so this is their about 50% more than what they would be allocated to get some feedback from the commission. Of that 150% list, about 43% of that is actually on the local system of those enhanced funds. I don't have a breakout of city and county system, but that's a significant shift in how we've spent our enhanced type money in the past, shifting from the state highway system to the local system, whether it's city or county. That process still will play itself out, and we'll actually have a draft STIP later this summer or fall, as we anticipate to have that. So just another way that we've worked with our local partners in cities and counties. The counties and cities are on the area commissions on transportation and help us go through those selection processes. So with that, I think that covers how we work with cities and counties and our federal and state funds.
Thank you, Paul. Questions? I have a couple. So the issue, I suppose, is, and we'll probably hear from, I know we're going to hear from our counties in a few moments, but this new process hopefully is designed to fill some of the gap that's going to occur as a result of our not having these federal monies. And the issue is going to be one of recognition early because things tend to wear out slowly, we hope. So how are you doing that? And we'll be asking the counties, too, to say how well they think ODOT is stepping into this gap or this breach created by the lack of federal money. And before you answer that, what is the state's obligation if these counties can't maintain these roads and people are being killed on them? What, in your opinion, tell us what we should be doing at the state level for these counties.
So, Chair Benz, I'll try to get all those.
Please. About a minute.
Each of us have our own responsibilities as a road authority. As a road authority, our responsibility is for the state highway systems. Each of the counties are road authorities, cities are road authorities, have their own responsibilities to take care of the system. That's a conversation for those counties, that have financial difficulties that they're in. We've had some legal opinions about the state's responsibility in taking over different services, road being one of those. But so far, because of the state highway fund, because there is some money going to those counties, we haven't seen a situation yet where there hasn't been revenue going to a county to some extent that they're able to do some basic maintenance of their system. So we've been falling back on the road authority. As a road authority, I'm responsible for my system. The counties are responsible for their system. As far as the selection process and filling the gap that may be created from the timber revenue receipts that are down, that's really not the aim of our change and our fix it to enhance process. It's really to look at the best projects that are out there. It may have that, you know, added benefit or unintended consequence, however you may look at it, to help fill that void. But it's really us trying to reach out to communities and apply those funds in the best, smartest way. We really rely back on that 50-30-20 split of the funds, again, back to the road authority and your responsibility. That 50-30-20 split is designed to each of us take care of what we're responsible for.
Okay, well, that brings us very nicely to the crux of the matter. If these smaller counties that don't have the money to maintain their systems aren't willing to raise taxes within their boundaries, will they be able to turn to the state and say, you have to do it?
That's the question.
Because if the 50-30-20 split is inadequate and there's a hazardous situation, let's say, pick a county, any county, someone that's not represented here.
Well, Chair Benz, I think you'd have to go back and look at statute and what our responsibilities under statute are. And I'm not familiar with the specific statutes in that circumstance, whether what ODOT's obligation would be in taking over the jurisdiction of those roads. I think, again, given the funding that is going, we just increased the gas tax and Jobs and Transportation Act to apply additional funding. There is some funding that's going to state, city, and county in that 50-30-20 to do some basic maintenance.
Questions? Yes.
So, when it comes to designs or standards for county roads, I know in the case of cities, there are standards that the state has on a statewide basis that dictates widths and certain requirements. Does the same thing apply to county roads? I'm trying to understand again from the standpoint of what the responsibility might or might not be from the state. So does the state have standards for county roads?
Chair Bench, Representative Lively, within ORIS Chapter 368, which is the county road chapter, there's a section that says basically the counties are to use the state standards unless they adopt their own.
Oh, okay.
Further questions? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
So just so everyone knows, we're going to be calling a series of county commissioners and county judges, but we're going to go with Judge Steve Grassi next. Steve or Judge Grassi, are you on the phone there, I hope?
Chair Vance, I am here. Thank you.
Well, Judge, go ahead,
would
Judge.
Would you like me to go ahead and start?
Please, go ahead.
So, Chair Bench, for the record, I am Steve Grassi. I'm Harney County Judge in Burns. And I always want to say thanks for the opportunity to testify, and particularly in this case for allowing me to testify by phone. I see the chair from Baker County, and I know I'm going to be in a meeting with him at 8 o'clock in the morning in Baker, so he's going to have to drive tonight, too. But as I start, for the chair, I just thought I might put this on the record. We've tried to figure out some leverage to get some help from the state, and one thing that we could come up with locally we thought we might be able to do if we ever have to downgrade roads is start by closing the road to your dad's ranch to go past it and then have him call you.
That will probably work.
But in all seriousness, you know, this county is 11% of the land mass of the state, and I'm going to begin here by just describing our system and then a little bit of the challenges we see today for it. So, as I said, 11% of the land mass. We've got about 900 plus miles of improved and maintained roads. So they're either paved or they're gravel, and we're doing some work on them repeated number of times, 3, 4, 5 times a year on those gravel roads. So that's the maintained system, if you will. We have another about 1,400 plus miles of more localized roads all the way down to just two-track unimproved roads. But most all of those roads will see a blade, a road grader, or some work on it. And then from time to time, we get reminded real pointedly that they're ours and there's something wrong. We better go fix it. Last summer in the big fires we had out here, we actually burned up three bridges. And I mean burned them till the only thing left was the concrete footings. There wasn't even ash left. And we got some calls right away, particularly after one guy drove off into what was left there, the hole. But we operate about 150 bridges. We have a system value somewhere between $150 and $200 million in today's dollars. Our road crew has shrunk from 28 in 1993, I take that back, 1995, and to 17 today, so not quite by half. We actually have more vehicles than we have operators today, so if we have a snow event in the winter, sometimes we're hiring contract drivers to help us. I heard earlier the question about how did timber receipts drop and did Superior Rural Schools pick it up. I came into office in January of 1999, and from the 94-95 year, this county had received $2.8 million. By the 99-2000 year, we got $70,000. So $2.8 million down to $70,000. And we got back up to about $2.5 million for most of this last decade or so. I looked to, just to be curious, our vehicle registration license shares about $400,000. It's been really constant around that $400,000 range every year. Generally, our system's in pretty good shape, and we continuously review it for condition and try and stay ahead so that we're doing maintenance, not repair. But we do have 15 miles that we can identify of poor condition, bad condition. That's about $250,000 a mile fix on those roads. There's actually five roads that add up to that mileage. So about a $4 million fix there. And about 25 miles of gravel roads that are in poor condition. And based on the last job that we did on a road to bring them back up to our standards, it was around $55 million a mile, or about $1.3 million to do it. I heard John say earlier, John also, that paving oil and chip seal oil cost, we showed in two decades here, oil going from $178 a ton to $550 a ton. Just to maintain what we've got to do today, we got to have a minimum of $1.5 million additional over what those other sources of money, the few ones that we have left, to replace the timber receipts, somewhere between $1.5 million and $2.5 million a year. As I said, it'd take about $5.3 million to get everything up to at least fair condition. Without that, we're going to eventually, and I think sooner than later, have to downgrade some roads. There's a road out by Druzy that serves a diatomaceous earth mine that has a plant where they process it near Vail. That road drives economic development and economics more in Mahier County than Harney County. That road's about 8 miles long, 2 miles of it's in Mahier County and about 6 miles in our county. There's an opportunity to work together with Mahier County on that, but that's one of the roads that needs about $250,000 a mile into, so about $2 million. And we actually would want to partner with the mine, too. They're the ones that wear it out, and so we think they would partner with us. They have in the past, but it's the first one we might downgrade. So that's really the story of woe. I think some of the solutions are here, without a doubt, gas tax or vehicle registration raises are some of the obvious things, although how difficult we all know those are. But I think there's some solutions we can do that don't require huge investments of state money. And I want to qualify this by saying those of us in Harney County, and I think this is true in most of Oregon, is we're not really looking for a handout from the state. You know, we live out here because we like it here, and we know we have a responsibility to help maintain services and our infrastructure. But if you think back and look back at the testimony you've already received, if we had more support from the state for natural resource opportunities, and we're beginning to see a little of that, we wouldn't be in the dilemma we are today, and that's a statewide statement. If we had adequate support from the state for the resources that locally we have to take care of, either through actual work on the ground or some kind of payment in lieu of, we'd be fine. The other one is, I think there's more opportunities for us to work together, and I mean ODOT, the county, the city, and private. Out of those 150 bridges I talked about, we have one bridge that's a $1 million bridge. It's 50 years old. It's in great shape. There's nothing wrong with it. It's probably good for another 50 years. But it has one problem. It's sitting on wood pilings. It's a concrete bridge sitting on wood pilings. Wow. Using state engineers, working together with them, I bet there's a solution to fix it so it's good for another 50 years. And we need to seek those opportunities. That bridge, you have to go across it to get the rock source that supplies the entire north end of Harney County for paving rock, for cement mix, for any kind of road maintenance gravel. So we got private companies going across it, the county, the city, and the state going across it regularly with heavy loads. And we ought to all partner together. But current laws really restrict us sometimes from being able to sit down and figure out what that looks like. The road that goes from the state highway, or the city street that goes from the state highway to our county road, also services ODOT's yard and one of the local cement plants. And it got torn up because of our heavy vehicles on it. And so one day we called the state and we called the rock guys, the cement guys, and said, hey, let's pave this road. And to be honest, I don't even think we called the city, but we repaved the road in about 2 hours. And that's 10 years ago, and it's held up good, and it'll hold up for another 20 years. But it's those kind of opportunities that we can save a lot of money on if we don't have to go through all the bureaucracy and the regulation to get it done. So there's a couple of solutions, and I'd sure answer questions if you want me to.
Thank you, Judge. Questions for Judge Grafstein? Yes, we have one. Representative McEwen.
Just a very quick question. I'm so sorry to hear that you lost those bridges to fire. That must have been very difficult. How long did it take to replace those bridges?
Well, it's a great question. It's on a road that it probably doesn't average 20 vehicles a day. What we've done in, let's see, at least two of them is the creeks that they cross only have water in them 1 or 2 days a year.
Okay.
And so we made dry crossings there.
Okay.
And then one of them we put culverts in. So we got it done fairly quickly, but had we had to buy the bridges that were there, we'd have been about $175,000 apiece.
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. We hope you stay on the line in case we have other questions. We're going to move to Commissioner Dan Schaun. I hope I have that right, Dan. Are you with us? I know you've been ill, so we're very happy you've joined us. Are you there?
I am here, and I thank you very much, Chairman Bentz and the committee, for allowing us to be able to present today. I just wanted to make a note that I'm not in the courthouse today, and on the line in the courthouse is Commissioner Brad Winters, our Roadmaster Rick DeMille, and our Commissioner Administrative Assistant Denise Thorsted. As you mentioned, I am Dan Schaun, one of the Lake County Commissioners, and it is a pleasure to have the chance to talk talk to the committee today. I will apologize up front in as much as some of the presentations there at the Capitol, I haven't been able to hear them as well, so I may end up repeating a few things. I'll try not to repeat anything Judge Grasty just said, but I do need to comment on a couple of things out of order of how I was going to present before I go on as a direct result of a couple of his comments. We are the third largest county, second to Harney and Malheur County in Oregon. And my comment, out of place a little bit, is the fact that 78% of our land base is federally managed public land. When we get into talking about options, there's not a lot of options when you heap all the burden of county services on the backs of 22% of the land base, those owners that own that 22%. So we're a little sensitive, even though we realize that they may come, that we have no other choice but to go after a bond measure. But our landowners currently are paying a pretty hefty amount every year in their taxation for the services that we are providing them. So with that said, I'm going to just go into the specific bullet points and just take them one at a time. The percentage and number of miles of road in our estimation, and we define bad or poor condition to be a condition that would need to be reground. These are paved roads and repaved. And we think we've got about 40% in that current condition of our total roads. How often are the county roads assessed? They're assessed annually, typically by a roadmaster. When we can scrape enough money together, we will get an engineer out there with our roadmaster to evaluate. But our roadmaster's been in this business going on 40 years now and has a pretty keen sense of road condition, and he's worked with engineers over the years, so he has a good understanding of road condition. The size of our county road department in full-time equivalents, currently we're running 13. In 1993, we were at 34. We had a high water mark of about 42 to 44 prior to then. Our road costs for maintenance and repair, in 1993, paving oil was running at about $149 per ton. It's currently running at $639. Our chip seal oil was $128 per ton, and it's now at $600 a ton. Chip seal cost per mile in 93 was about $5,000, currently five times that amount for this year's chip sealing we're going to do at $25,000 per mile. Paving cost per mile in 1993 was just over $40,000, and this year it's going to be running at $105,000 per mile. How much money would the county need to maintain the status quo of county road conditions? And I'm sure for the committee there will be some head scratching, because I listened to Judge Grasty's, and it's not, you know, I think John did speak to you, if you've been to one county, you've been to one county in Oregon. But our estimate is about $6 million per year for our gravel and paved road maintenance system. How much money would the county need to improve all county roads to a good or excellent condition? It'd take a one-time infusion of about $17 million. Going on to recommend sources of funding other than what we currently have, for the first time ever in Lake County, I think Representative Vance, Chairman Vance, you spoke of PILT earlier on, but the true PILT, not the SRS, but the payment in lieu of tax for other lands that some of the counties in Oregon receive that goes to our general fund, it is available to spend on roads. And for the first time ever, we took a substantial amount of that this year just to offset some of the reserve monies. And we have fairly limited reserves, but we took a fairly substantial amount of PILT money for the first time to put into our road department for this year's program. It's not sustainable or anywhere close to enough to fund even a small program over time, but we've got to do everything we can to keep up, as we said, the 13 employees and the size of our road program that we have. And it's in part and partial to the fact that we have some fairly major commodity uses, and one of the biggest is our alfalfa ranching community in the northern end of the county. Produces some of the highest quality alfalfa in the nation, and dusty, dirty roads are not a good mixture with this quality of alfalfa, nor the amount of trucks that we actually have to go out over those roads. So we do try and keep those roads in good condition. The second thing, and we have a lot of cattle ranches here, and we have a lot of cattle trucks and other types of larger transportation needs, but the alfalfa is probably one of the biggest ones. The next thing, because of the size and the diversity of the county from one end to the other, it's well over 100 miles in length, and we have access needs for our police, for our fire, specifically for emergency EMT units. Our school bus routes are very long and in a lot of cases very remote, and we get a lot of real winter weather, and so we try and maintain all of those roads and keep them plowed, and so that's another big use for us and another big need for us as a county. We have some recreation use. We have our access points, of course, to the National Forest lands as well as the Bureau of Land Management, but the primary road system into the forest that used to haul out timber, because we do have some timber extraction, but it's a very small amount, and that, I think, in large part is the reason that we're here having this discussion today, is because we aren't, not to get into that side of the ledger, but we aren't managing our forest in a responsible, multiple-use manner, and so we're not generating any of the historical revenue as a result of that. And Chairman Bence, if the committee would like, I will expand a little bit on the notion, because I am of a little bit different mindset when it comes to these federally managed lands and, you know, the state's role and potential future funding. I think it's great that you've convened this meeting, and I think we need to have that conversation. I think we need to have the conversation on how we can share resources, et cetera. But I think at the heart of it all is the federally managed lands and what I would refer to as an obligation. So I'll leave it at that and see if you have a question or a desire to have me expand more.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions for Commissioner from Lake County?
Very helpful.
No, it sounds all too familiar to us, Commissioner. But thank you very much. And if you'll stay on the line, we're going to listen next to Commissioner Sid Wyken. Do I have that right? Oh, mm-hmm. Fred Warner.
Well, no, I don't.
Come on up, Fred. We'll go with you next. I was going to give them a respite from Eastern Oregon for a moment, but they're stuck with us. Go ahead.
Well, after Lake County and Harney County, we go to the we're kind of the urban county in Eastern Oregon compared to those two.
That's a bar is set fairly modestly there, Commissioner.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Bence. I'm not going to go over what my colleagues talked about. Eastern Oregon, I am the chair of the Baker County Commission and a co-chair of AOC, and have been on the Northeast Area Commission on Transportation for the last 10 years. So do a lot of transportation issues. My 11 years on the Baker County Commission, every year the road department and funding that is a scary thing. We've been reauthorized year after year for the last 10 years. This, you hate to cry wolf, but I think this year, if we get it, we will be extremely lucky. So, in essence, we have low population, few registered vehicles, and a lot of roads. And that And so we don't have a lot of dollars to maintain the system. Baker County, we get secure rural schools. We get PILT money, which is payment of lieu of taxes. They're both different. They offset each other when we get them both. But with over 50% of our land mass belonging to the federal government, it makes it really hard on that other 48% of the value of the of property taxes, especially when a lot of that is dry range ground. So this will always present a challenge for us to overcome. I would like to go and just talk a little bit about the revenues. I hope you have this in front of you. I brought around a sheet, but in 2009 through 13, we've gotten between 670,000 and 780,000 or even 840,000 in federal forest receipts. That is scheduled. Our actual cut in 2013 is scheduled to be $40,000. So we've known and we've tried to prepare for that. We have about 1.9 million in reserve. We figure that will last us 1 year, and then we're going to have some major challenges. As I talked before, the state allocation, the gas tax fees, has gone from 930,000 in 910 to about 1.3 million. We don't expect that those taxes will go up on that line from here on out with the mandates for higher mileage vehicles. We think that's going to be stable around the 1.3 million. STP funds, the federal funds that the state gives us, around 210,000 or so. And then over the years, we have had some capital sources. The big money has come the last 2 years with the JTA funds. We've done a lot of roads, freight connectors with the JTA money, and it's really good, but we have a system that's dying and we're building some really nice roads. Personnel-wise, we went from a million, we've kept it down. We went from 1 million in 2009 to about 1.2 million this year, projecting about almost 1.3 next year. Our maintenance dollars, we've kept them rather reasonable, and then you can see as the capital has gone up. As a budget officer, though, these numbers are really scary when we've got total state highway allocation of about 1.3 and personnel costs of about 1.295. We're going to have some people and we won't even have money to buy gas to run them. So it's not quite as dire as that, but one of these days we're going to get there. Baker County has 650 miles of gravel roads that we maintain 3 to 4 times a year. They're in pretty good shape. Some of them haven't had gravel for a long time. We got 187 miles of paved road. Last year, we took about 1 mile of the paved road and tore it up and took it back to gravel. My roadmaster would do more, but my philosophy has always been a bad paved road's better than a good gravel road. That's until it gets too big of potholes, and then it isn't. We've got 300 miles of public access roads that we blade maybe once a year, and then we've got another 500 miles of dirt road and RS-2477 roads that we only get to when there's huge issues. We went from, and we plow 650 miles of road for snow in the wintertime, which is, depending on the year, sometimes daily basis, weekly basis. And this year we had a pretty decent snow year. So in 1982 we had 42 employees. Today we've got 15. We've got 12 road graders. We've got one 1967 that thankfully we don't use. We've got two 1971s that we only use on really bad snow years. Most of our graders are between in mid-80s and 1990s. We've got about 12 trucks. They average about 750,000 miles on each truck. I would like to share just a little bit about our $40,000 in actual forest receipts. We had in 1985 $1.9 million in actual forest receipts. So, and with that, we had three operating mills, and we had hundreds of people in the woods cutting trees, and now we have 40,000 in actual forest receipts, and we really have no employees involved in that. So I will echo, we really need to look at managing the federal forest as we go forward. I think I would just conclude with what I think are probably some of the things that we can do, that you can do, we can do together. I know you guys are going to have to make some strategic decisions about the future of funding for transportation, and I think we need to make sure that everybody understands that one size doesn't fit all. I know Cliff and I, in the JTA funding, I tried my best to work out a way that it could be flexible enough so that we could do operations and maintenance with the money that all the other counties wanted for modernization and congestion, and it didn't work at that point, but we really don't need money now to fund capital projects. We need money just to be able to open our road department doors every day and plow a gravel road, clean a culvert out, do the things that every day aren't easy to do, and we're running out of money. I know that everybody thinks that we should pass a tax base or do something like that, but we have a historic way that we funded things, and right now with CCOs and the Early Learning Council, we have elections, we've got assessment, we've got community corrections that 3 years ago we were getting $900,000, this year we're getting $500,000 from the state to run our jails and parole and probation. All of that money has to be put to use, and at the end of the day we have to make tough choices. So I, the county can absorb all the costs, but we're not going to let our system go. But as you go forward at looking at fees and gas tax, the Columbia River crossing, and everything that you guys have got to do, my take home today is make it flexible. If it doesn't sound like we can make it work, work with us, and we'll come up with a way that we can make it work for the Eastern Oregon counties, the urban counties, and all the counties in between. So, Chair Bentz, I would answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions for?
Well, I think this is more of a comment because, in the metro area we face a different problem. We've got, revenues coming in, but the need is much greater with what we have to do. And so it sounds like about the only solution is dealing with timber revenues and trying to get timber revenues and opening up federal forests. And I'm not quite sure we've got the power to do that. But, where's that going on the federal level? I have a feeling it's not going very far.
And like Judge Grasty, we are, that my meeting tomorrow is a forest plan revision for the Wallowa, Mau here in Umatilla National Forest. And, we're talking about doing some landscape, 50 to 100,000 acres, collaborative, working with the environmental groups. It's slow. Part of the problem is that, the infrastructure's gone. We have two mills in Union County, one in Grant County, and then one in Pilot Rock, and one over in Prineville, and there used to be 40. And so it's going to take a while to ramp that up. But I think we have to work towards a statewide solution to things. We will survive in Eastern Oregon because we'll put stuff together with bale and wire, and we'll make it work. But at the end of the day, in your position, if you can give us flexibility to use whatever dollars that are there to be used in the proper place, we'll make it work. So.
Thank you. I dealt with public schools for 30 years, and we had school districts that never took a dime of state money because it was all federal. They had all timber money. And so they were doing well when other districts were cutting back and doing so on. So I know that this is not only a county problem, but it's also in some of the more rural districts that used to depend almost solely on timber revenues, same sort of situation. Some
districts. When they made the state formula and pooled all the money, some winners, some losers, and I know our schools need lots of money, too.
Yeah. I appreciate your suggestions.
Yeah. Other questions? Thank you very much, Commissioner, for driving all the way over here and joining us today in person, and have a safe drive back.
That'll be nice. Book on tape.
Okay, now we'll try Commissioner Sidlick from Lane County.
Chair Benz and members of the committee, my name is Sid Lyken, and chair of the Lane County Board of Commissioners, and I co-chair AOC Transportation with Commissioner Warner. And I'm going to give this a shot. If I'd have known I had to do this myself, I'd have brought my 18-year-old son with me. So I'm going to give this a shot here. I haven't ran one of these in a while, so I do have a little PowerPoint. I will warn you, it was developed by engineers, and so... So there's going to be lots of numbers there.
We understand.
Okay. I'm glad somebody does. So let's see here. Is this it? Is that it? What do I do now?
Lower right.
Hit F5.
Where's that? See?
We're sending engineers out to try to solve a project.
Perfect. Okay. There we go. All right. Here we go. So just to give you a little bit of context of Lane County, and I actually liked it when it was developed by the engineer folks and our Lane County Public Works folks. Lane County, as you can see, is roughly over 4,500 square miles, which makes it about the size of the state of Connecticut. We have about 1,432 miles of roads and bridges, but if you look at the bottom, our infrastructure investment just on roads is $6 billion. Mm. So if we were part of the Forbes 400, we would be at least top 200, be my guess, if we were in that category. So that's a tremendous amount of investment if you think about that. I'm a business guy. My career is in business. And if I had a business and I had to maintain $6 billion worth of assets, that's going to take a tremendous amount of money to maintain that. You can't go out and purchase equipment every other year. With our county road functions, pavement to preservation, ditch cleaning, culvert replacement, sanding, plowing, fallen tree clearing, bridge maintenance, striping, signage, signals, vegetation management, natural disaster response. What's unique about Lane County is we start from the Cascades to the coast. So we're either plowing snow or rescuing people in Mapleton and from a flood. And this is almost seems like typical every single year. And by the way, your public works folks are part of your first responders, and they're right there in the very at the outset, along with your sheriff and other emergency personnel. But I think you saw the previous slide, 414 bridges. We are required to maintain 414 bridges throughout Lane County. We're not in a position that they're going to be dry, and we could eventually drive in the middle. We do have to. Those are creeks and rivers that require those bridges to be maintained. And because of the what we've noticed in the last few years, especially with the flooding, it's required a tremendous amount of work from our Public Works Department on that on that disaster response, in particular on the coast. And as I mentioned, Mapleton. Mapleton's been hit hard the last 2 years. Operating revenue, you're hearing, I think, from each county. It has slowly been declining, and as I mentioned, that's $6 billion. It takes approximately, hopefully the next slide. Okay, this also includes reserves. Oh, that's pretty tricky. I didn't realize I have it all set up just once a year. But so as you see, the reserves have declined tremendously. And a lot of that, the reserves are set right toward our Securable Schools money. So the money has come from either Securable Schools or timber harvest beforehand. That really was the embodiment of our reserves, and that has slowly declined. The way we look at it right now, if we're unable to see any additional revenue, our reserves will basically line item out by 2017. Paved road maintenance, $30,000 per mile per year, 1,272 miles. So the original 1,400 miles, just so you know, we do have a few hundred miles of gravel. It's pretty limited. Most of ours are what I would call, I would just mention right here, most of our call are paved roads. But the total expense is $38 million. And then you see the operating revenues, $28 million. Mm. So our net road operations is $10 million, and negative $10 million, and it continues to be that way. As I mentioned before, we expect to potentially line item out by 2017. So we draw down our reserves, $10 million on an annual basis. Right now our reserves show about $27 million as we speak, and based on that formula, we will by the next 3 to 4 years be gone. Capital investments, we used to have actually provide quite a bit of capital investment. And in fact, this is one area I'd like to talk to you a little bit about. And with Representative Nathanson, who I served with when she was a Eugene City Councilor, when I served as the mayor of the city of Springfield, known Representative Lively for many years as well. And when you look at the 03 to 09 scenario there, the capital investments, a lot of that was due to, say, I-5 Beltline Interchange. I'm going to use this as an example. You'd have a project like this, which is either a federal project. Obviously, the Oregon Department of Transportation is involved in this. The Oregon Transportation Commission will come in and ask for, what's your match? What's your local match? Well, the city of Eugene and Springfield did not have $15 million in their hip pocket for a local match. The local match came from Lane County. Lane County would provide the local match on all these major projects where cities didn't have to. It's to this point now. In fact, the last few years, whomever the commission chair is, whether it be Commissioner Ackerman or Commissioner Egan, we've mentioned to him that, well, hopefully you're going to have a different formula or a different idea when it comes to the ONC counties or the timber counties, because we no longer have that match available if you want to see any sort of major investments. So and the other piece on this is that when you look at the leverage that has happened with county road funds on other infrastructure that created economic development, we have one in particular in Springfield called the Pioneer Parkway and the Pioneer Parkway Extension, Martin Luther King Parkway. Lane County provided $5 million to build that extension. Today, there's a $500 million regional hospital, employs 3,000 people. $5 million, $500 million, 3,000 employees. Think about that for a minute. That's a pretty small leverage when it comes to road funds that can create economic development opportunities. So you come to changes in county road functions. You know, road maintenance continues to drop down. Our road quality, our road repair costs continue to increase. Services provided are going to continue to decrease. Natural disaster response capacity, it's going to be challenging. If we have any more floods in Mapleton, it can be very challenging for us to continue to rebuild those roads. And funds to leverage federal aid and or grants is going to continue to decrease. So as you look at the years 1998 through 2009, the city and the county partnership, there used to be a partnership involved where the county would provide a total of $5 million to the cities. We never had to go out and ask for a gas tax, folks, because that money would come back to the counties or the cities for operation and maintenance. Perfect example, Springfield itself would receive over $1 million directly for operation and maintenance, right from county road funds. That no longer exists, which has caused some of our cities to have to go out and ask for gas taxes instead to replace that. Assisted housing projects, capital project partnerships, community economic development projects. If you look at the total revenue shared, $53.5 million. But yet, as I stated before, if you look at the investment opportunities that it has created, especially with private sector, has been tremendous. So this is something I thought was kind of interesting, the motor vehicle operating costs. If you look at the U.S. average and look at some of the states involved here, no, we're not California. I'm thankful for that. Oh, I missed it. Anyway, Oregon was, if you looked at California at $721, Oregon was about approximately one-eighth that cost. Sorry, I went past that a little bit too quick. So it was just kind of an interesting scenario to show where Oregon ranks as far as other states are, especially some of our western states. Anyway, that's the conclusion of my PowerPoint, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Questions?
Well, it's nice going towards the end, I got to tell you. Oh, whoops.
Not going to get out quite. No. So the timber money goes away. The people don't leave. They're still all there. The roads are still there. What's the solution, in your opinion?
Well, we're looking at potentially. I mean, one of the solutions that was provided by the state legislature is allowing counties to potentially go out and ask for vehicle registration fees. You can put together a vehicle registration fee countywide. That's potential. I would say ultimately is to, in my opinion, is to continue to collaborate with both the state and our federal partners. I think ultimately that's where something has to be done, and especially with, I mean, I'm listening to Commissioner Warner. Thank God our county is only 54% owned by the federal government, but so that in itself becomes problematic. But I really believe it's going to have to be a collaborative partnership between the locals, the state, and the federal defense to come up with some sort of plan. But we have some local options. They're available. I think that we potentially could enact that. I would suggest that the Lane County Board would not. The Lane County Board would most likely refer that to a vote of the public, and if that's something that we decide to do.
So the thing that's of interest is that we still have the asset that we were using before, that is the timber. The decision at some level has been made not to use it. The system that we built with those timber dollars exists. Now we're trying to maintain it, but without the very foundation that we utilize to build it. And so it's not one of those things that ratchets back very nicely, very easily.
No, it isn't. And I must say, Chair Benz, for me personally, I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian. My family's been in the timber industry in the state for 100 years. And if it was up to me, if I were king for a day or a year, clearly I would be looking more towards, hopefully putting forward a sustained yield on our federal lands. Because right now what you're seeing, I don't know if you've been able to, there's been some articles out from especially in the Wall Street Journal and others that talk about Lane County mills in particular, and that was the focus, Lane County. They are really in right now producing, and if you look at some of our mills, are actually back up to full operation, 24 either 7 days or 5 days a week, because of opportunities there. Where are they getting their supply? It's not coming from the federal lands. It's either coming from private land. There's quite a bit coming from state lands in the state of Washington, from their trust, coming down, being shipped down here. But they're not harvesting off our federal lands. And so while I'm thrilled to see the mills working towards that, I'm thrilled to see the mills hiring folks. But what's happening here is that while it's great to get people on the payroll, the formula that's based on the timber counties with revenue coming back clearly has continued to go downward.
Yes, Representative Lyman.
So I assume there could be other counties that had some of that interrelationship between the county road funds and cities. Maybe not as much. But so when we talk about solutions, I guess, Commissioner, I'd be interested in hearing. So if you're having those conversations locally, don't those solutions include the cities? Now, you talked about the potential for the county to do vehicle registrations. But it appears to me, given this linkage, that the county would be hard-pressed to do that without a joint effort.
Chair Benz, Representative Lively, that is a very good question, and frankly, that's if the county were to move forward on any sort of idea especially with a vehicle registration fee, my expectation would be that the cities would have skin in the game as well, because we would like to build out a formula of what it potentially could look like. Now, again, those dollars would go to operation and maintenance,
sure,
which is the key for the cities, but hopefully there would be skin in the game from the cities if we were to move forward on that. Kind of a local option.
Further questions? See none. Thank you, Commissioner, very much.
Thank
very,
you.
Very nice PowerPoint.
Thank you.
Very much for that.
Appreciate it.
Now, our final commissioner is Mark Labbert from Tillamook County.
For some reason, Mark seems more tech-friendly and savvy than I am.
No, it's Sandy.
I'll go ahead and get started. Chair Benson, members of the committee, I'm Mark Labhart, and I have the privilege of chairing the Tillamook County Board of Commissioners. I also serve on AOC's Transportation Committee and have been on the Northwest Act for my 9 years. Before I start, I'd like to thank you for allowing us to come and talk to you today. I want to particularly thank you for your attention. You're all busy people. You probably have a lot of things going on. I appreciate it when legislators are interested in the subject and stay engaged throughout. So I thank you very much for that. So I'm going to give a PowerPoint presentation, and this is going to be pretty sobering. Likely the worst in the state. Well, let's just talk about that. Let's just look and see. This is a county road. It was a county road that went up the Nehalem River, a pretty major access road for most of our county is a state-owned, the Tillamook State Forest. And this was a major access road that would bring forest products out of the state forest and was wiped out in one of the bridges back up here. And this is the Salmonberry Railroad that you see right there, trying to get it back in shape, at least to that point. This is a little difficult to see here with the lighting, but this is a culvert that failed and washed out. We had a few years ago a culvert that failed on a county road called Fawcett Creek. A lady and her two children drove into the culvert late at night, washed down the stream, and were sitting on top of the car. You might have seen it in the TV stations. Thank goodness they survived. But it was just a case of the culvert washed out from lack of maintenance, and those folks survived. This is a, for some reason this is on a automatic.
Back up. No, the road people just want to get out of Tillamook County. In one piece.
It shouldn't be on automatic. Let's go back here.
You did.
Wow.
Back up.
Okay. So this is a road in the south part of our county. This is a typical county road, farm to market type of road. The Mistucca River's right there. This is Cape Mears Scenic Loop. We've currently got that road closed right now. So if you want to go to the state park at Cape Mears, you're going to have to go a long ways around. This is the road a couple years ago. It failed, so we moved the road up the hill a little bit. This is what it looks like today. That's the Cape Mears Loop Road. Now, we can run out there on a basis of having somebody stay there, an employee, and keep the road graded, but we don't have the time or the staffing to do that. And so you say, well, that's not too bad. You could go real slow and get through there. But this road has moved 2 feet in the last month. And so we don't know if it's going to move 2 feet tomorrow or not. And we haven't had a lot of rain in Tillamook County, which is unusual for us. But we haven't had a lot of rain. So we've actually closed this highway. This is the same road. Got to be pretty careful if you got your fifth wheeler or you're towing behind there to move on that county road. This is on the Nestucca River, bank failure right here. Our public works director, Leanne Welch, tells me that this is about 30 to 40 feet deep. So you can't just throw gravel in there, rock in there, because it's going to just go right in the river and you're not going to. This is a pretty major fix for us. This is a little bit difficult to see, but this is a culvert. It's an old worn out culvert, and this is the bottom of the culvert that has rusted out. We have literally hundreds of culverts in this condition. Now, this is a typical guardrail in Tillamook County. We use a log as a guardrail there to keep people from driving off the road. I shouldn't say it's typical, but it is.
It's very innovative.
We're trying to keep people from driving into the road there. This picture is, you can't quite see it. darn it, didn't show up real well, but there's a log root wad that's the size of a Volkswagen bus that's sitting right in front of this bridge. It's right, the truck's on the bridge there. This is the community of Neskowin. The governor used to have a place there. I think our Secretary of State has a place there. This log is right up against the bridge, came in on the tide, and trying to get it out. This is the only access into the community of Neskowin, so this is one of the issues that we have with our bridge. This is a culvert that has failed, washed out, and the joint and pipes, we've got some huge issues with that, too. Now, this is a county road that goes up into BLM and U.S. Forest Service property. That was a paved road right there, and went right up that draw and right through there. The river was over here. Now it's washed out the county road, so we have no access up into this part of Tillamook County. Now, this is actually the road that I live on. this is Mill Creek Road, and you're dodging the potholes. And my neighbors tell me, Mark, why don't you move? And I said, what? And he said, yeah, because the only way we're ever going to get this road fixed is if you move, because if we fix it, it'll be perceived as favoritism toward a county commissioner. So I live on one of the worst county roads that you have.
That's true.
And this, oh, darn it, didn't show very good. This cartoon pretty much says it all. I don't know why it's
We have a copy.
Well, you can see. Now, this is my funny whole story, folks. In other places, if you're sober, you drive straight. If you're drunk, you drive this way. In Tillamook County, if you're sober, you drive like this. If you're drunk, you just drive right through the pocket. So that's my whole message for you. So let me just read you. This is a letter that the county received in October of 2007. 2007. It's from EIS Incorporated, and it's from Joel Condor, who's the Senior Project Manager for Engineering Information Services. I'm just going to read you a portion of the letter. And this was addressed to our County Public Works Director, Leanne Welch. She says, I feel very confident in telling you that Tillamook County roads as a whole are the worst in the state of Oregon. Approximately half the county road system is deficient upon roughness, rideability, the surface disturbance. Over the past 10-plus years that I have been rating these roads, pavement repair and maintenance work has been severely underfunded, resulting in a large backlog of the road segments in very poor to mediocre condition. At the current rate of funding, this number will increase to nearly 75% of the network mileage, falling into the poor condition categories in the next 7 years. I've been rating pavements from various agencies since 1989. I've never seen a county that has a worse overall network pavement condition index than Tillamook County's, which is 48. I personally have rated over 31 of the 36 counties in Oregon over the last 15 years, and will tell you that Tillamook County's rates the worst in the state. And then it goes on. So my point's made. This is some of our critical risks that our public works director has identified. And again, I think the other commissioners have talked about this. It's not just roads. It's signs, it's culverts, it's bridges, it's striping, it's the equipment, it's the guardrails, it's the whole thing. Our county, I know what's going on here. It's going back to the slideshow at the Detroit base.
Oh, there you go.
Let me jump down here. There we go. Now we're getting back. Well, let's go back to this one. This is the best one there. So this pretty much says what the other commissioners have talked about. Our funding has dropped off significantly, and you can see the green is the federal funding, and our federal funding has dropped off significantly. This is our state funding and our local funding. But we have $1.8 million in secure rural schools money, and I think we're getting $60,000 this year. So same story as the other counties. Summary, major expenditures. Oh, it's back doing that again. Major expenditures are reactive maintenance, vegetation management, spraying only. All resources are now allocated to reacting to potholes, bridge maintenance, culverts, and guardrails. Our county system may be turned around in 10 years with well-planned expenditures of additional local revenue. Okay, now let's play the tough questions here. Okay, so what have you done to try and fix the problem? What are your plans for the future? We elected you. County Commissioners, we've elected you to provide leadership. Where's the leadership here? I mean, your roads are getting bad. What are you doing about it?
Well, we've put before the voters four ballot measures, beginning as far back as 1996. In 1996, we had a 4-cent gas tax. That's when counties could put in place or go to the voters with a gas tax. Failed 66%. No. That's a pretty clear message from our voters. 1999, we said, okay, let's try something else. Went out, talked to our voters, said, what about a 5-cent property tax increase? Failed 64%. No.
We're getting better.
So we said, well, let's try something else. 2008, formed a road district, dollar assessment, failed 65%. Okay, let's try something else. 2011, we went out for a 46-cent general obligation bond that would bring in $15 million. Failed 53%. We got closer. We are excited about that. So now, this is our latest effort. On May 21st, we have a $15 million bond split into two $7.5 million bonds. Because of the low interest rates, our rate went from 46 cents to 39 cents. We're hopeful. We're hopeful that'll pass. Now, that's all. Now we can go to the lights. In answers to the questions, sir, that you asked, I'll just quickly go through those. What is the percentage number of miles in bad or poor condition? Answer, 23% in poor condition, 27% in very poor condition. How often county road conditions are assessed? We assess ours every 2 years. What is the size of the county road department? In 2013, we have 19 FTE. In 1993, we had 39. And as the other county just told you, we used to have 50 prior to 1993. What is the cost of road maintenance and repairs for 2013 and 1993? Answer, this is difficult for us to answer depending on what materials we're talking about. And we actually use the cost of asphalt, not oil. I think the other commissioners talked about the cost of oil. We use the cost of asphalt. 2007, we paid $45 a ton. 2013, we expect to pay roughly $60 to $70 per ton depending on who we buy it from. How much money would the county need to maintain the status quo of a county roads? Answer, difficult question to answer. Our current budget is $2.4 million. We would need about $3.4 million. We plan to add about $1.5 million if the bond passes. Remember, it's a 15-year bond, 10 years. So we add about $1.5 million a year to get us to that $15 million for the 10-year bond date. And this should increase our road conditions. It's sure not going to hurt anything, but we have a big problem. We have a $40 million problem. How much money would you need to improve all the county roads to a good condition or excellent condition? Our Public Works Director, Leanne Welch, estimates $53 million. What's your recommendation? You've asked the others that same question. I don't think we can decide that today. I think, Chair, I would recommend that we put together an interim committee made up of the Association of Oregon Counties, your leadership, cities, Department of Transportation, and I would even invite the feds to the table and say, okay, we know what the issues are with federal lands. We know what the issues are with our economy struggling and trying to turn back around. We had the transportation package a few years ago. I compliment you for the work that you did on that. That was an outstanding package. We need to look at all the available options that are available to us to look at funding the system. And the system is not only state roads, it's county roads and city roads. Mm-hmm. We are all in this together. When a Tillamook farmer takes that milk, it's going to go over a private road on their farm, and it's going to go onto a county road, and it's going to go onto a state highway to get to the cheese factory that produces our great Tillamook cheese. And so I can use examples all over the state of, you know, getting beef to market. And then the other issue for me is safety. I got to talk to the mother of those two children that sat on top of that car while the floodwaters were ravaging around them. And thank goodness they survived. But I want that ambulance that is bringing a loved one to the hospital at a high rate of speed on a dark, rainy night in Tillamook County to get that loved one there safely. And right now, they can't dodge the potholes because they can't see it. School buses can't dodge potholes. And so we need to work together to try to resolve this issue. You see the train wreck coming, not only at the state level, but at the local level. And we need to work together to try to address that, and I think the Association of Oregon County stands ready to assist you. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Well, again, more of a comment. I mean, I've driven through Tillamook underwater, you know, going around the cheese factory, and, you know, understand what the plight, especially of the rural areas. But this is just a comment, but maybe you guys are going to have to change your motto to cheese, trees, ocean breeze, and road money, please. you got a chance to get out there. There you go.
We've had 15 presidentially declared disasters since 1996. Oh, yeah. And I think that is not only the boast of any county in Oregon, it's probably boast of any county in the nation. You've seen 15 presidentially declared disasters since 1996. Oh, yeah.
I spent quite a bit of time in Tillamook County, and it is not good.
Yeah, so. And 101, I mean, my ODOT friends tell me they spend about four times the amount of maintenance money on Highway 101 than they do on any other state highway per capita because of the issues on 101.
Representative Lyman.
But thank you for the information.
So maybe, again, I like the way this was displayed, and maybe it's the same with all counties, but it talks about the funding, and it talks about local funding. You can hardly see it on the chart, and it mentions 0%. $0 from property taxes. So is that, I mean, so how do you, what funds you have locally if you don't have state, federal reimbursement? So where do your funds come from if they're not property taxes?
Registration and gas taxes.
Okay.
Is where the main source is. Yeah. That you cannot by law use property tax money from the taxpayers for, help me, Don.
Right. The general fund property tax cannot be used for roads. To use property tax for road, there has to be a specific election where the people are voting for the property taxes to be used for roads. There's several ways it can be done, but they all take an election specifically for roads.
Mm-hmm. So the bonds you're talking about would be, if it passes, would be repaid by property taxes?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Hmm. Further questions? See, the problem is that you have too much water.
Darn that.
Yeah, there's some places lacking. And then maybe Chair Grasty wouldn't shut your father's place.
What is the population of Tillamook County?
Well, we actually have 25,000 cows and 25,000 people.
So the short answer of taxing those 25,000 people, that's going to be inadequate no matter what we do. We need a larger funding source.
Yes,
that's
sir.
That's been the case across all the testimony we've heard, with the possibility of Lane County to actually have enough people that we might be able to do something there. But even then, broader group of people and more assets necessary for that effort. Thank you so much for your presentation. It's just excellent, as were the other PowerPoints we saw and testimony we heard. So thank you
so much.
Sir.
And you may use my slogan. I'll give it to you.
So with that, committee members, we're going to turn. Do you want to do that today, or you want to wait until another meeting? Today's fine if you would like to do so.
It's 4:40. Let's not do it today.
Okay. With that, members of the committee, I think we'll go ahead and, unless you have something anyone wants to say about what we've just heard, comments? Well, with that, we'll adjourn. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.